this is a very meaningful agreement. It's the first time that 193 countries, the civil society, the private sector, 7 million individuals that were interviewed, come together and develop a shared vision of humanity that basically covers many of the needs and aspirations of the people. And many of these needs and aspirations also are those of a person in Africa, for example, whether it is access to water, access to health, access to better governance, access to a legal identity, for example, access to a more peaceful society. So through this system of 17 goals and 169 targets, the international community broke it down, broke this shared vision to sizable bites that can be checked, that can be followed, that can be reviewed and implemented over the next 15 years. So that in 2030, we can live on a planet that can better sustain the needs of humanity, but also that is a place with more equality, a place in which extreme poverty is a thing of the past.
So in 2030, if this agenda works out, a citizen of the world wakes up and has access to?
Of course, already today in the north, a citizen has access to water, to all kinds of products. Many of the consumption patterns of our world are not sustainable, and other parts of the world have to suffer because of it. And so we hope that by 2030, this can be improved, and our consumption, our production can be more sustainable, our production systems can be such that the risks are spread better across the production chain and not just with the lowest link, let's say.
Why are the SDGs referred to as a We the People's agenda?
It recalls the first phrase of the Charter of the UN that speaks as we, the peoples of the UN, meaning that it is the nations of the world that come together and decide this solemnly together, and that these benefits should be universal.
Now, how are the Sustainable Development Goals going to guarantee peace and security?
Well, peace and security are, of course, complex issues. But many of the issues that are dealt with in the Sustainable Development Goals seek to address some of the root causes of lack of peace and lack of security. And one of the biggest ones is probably the stark inequalities, the lack of access to natural resources or to basic resources and basic services by people, and the weakness of governance systems at various levels. So this agenda hopes to address these. I mean, another very important and probably the most fundamental commitment of this agenda is to leave no one behind. Much of the violence and insecurity in this world has to do with people feeling that they have been left behind. And so they have nothing to lose. They walk across borders. They try and look for a better life. And that creates anxiety and insecurity as well.
Member states will obviously be made accountable to all these goals and targets?
The accountability really is enshrined in the ownership at the national level. It's very important that in September, when our heads of state and government come to New York, it's not for the photo op. It's to promise to the people back home that this agenda, this shared vision of humanity, is for them also. The accountability for the implementation really needs to be based on a new social contract between governments and their people, between the duty bearers and the rights holders. And that is what is critical. Of course, the rest of the system, the international system, needs to support that through reviews at the regional level, through the possibility to present national progress at the global level, thematic reviews as well, making use of intergovernmental forums that we already have, be it on climate change, such as the one in Paris in December, or on biodiversity, or on migration, or on access to water, etc. I mean, so many of these themes actually already have intergovernmental conferences and meetings that deal with them, and that's good. But all this is worth nothing if the people don't know what this agenda promises to them.